All right, well, good morning. Good morning. It is good to be here. I should say it's good to be back with you. A little different reason than maybe Phil, but I haven't been here for 3 weeks. Missed the last couple of Sundays. I was home with headaches and body aches and coughing and congestion. And so hopefully I'm beyond that. I'm praying that I don't cough because that into a microphone is about the worst. So, but definitely feeling much better. And so it's always good to be here and to see each one of you. Thank you to Dan Graydon and Aaron O'Neill for the last 2 weeks. If you missed their sharing, you're always welcome to go on the website. You can catch it there or on podcasts. And so you're welcome to go back and listen to it. Before we get into it today, let me go ahead and dismiss our youngest. As we say, anyone who can fit in one of those tiny chairs. So you are dismissed. Thank you, Moses. Moses can still fit in one of those tiny chairs. Yeah. All right, for the rest of us, let me invite you this morning to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 31. Deuteronomy 31 sounds like a good place to start today. If you're grabbing a Pew Bible, page 147, the words will be on the screen behind me as well. We continue today working our way through the Jesus backstory. The backstory that is the Torah, the first five books of our Bibles. Jesus being the fulfillment of the whole of the Torah. And with that, again, we come to Deuteronomy 31, what is Parsha Vayelech. Parsha Vayelech picks up at Deuteronomy 31, opening verse, and runs through the end of 31, so verses 1 through 30, what is the 52nd of the 54 Parshiot in the Torah. The Torah divided into 54 Parshiot, 54 sections. 54 passages, and we've worked through 52 of them now, or this is the 52nd now, and so we're kind of nearing the end. So Deuteronomy 31, the opening line, it says, we read, Vayelech, what is the name of our Parsha, it translates, and he went, Vayelech Moshe, and he, Moses, went, and then we get Vayedabar et ha-devarim ha-eleh, and spoke these words, El Kol Yisrael, to the people of Israel, to the whole of Israel, to all of Israel. And Moses went and spoke these words, it says, to all of Israel. And then from there, Parsha Vayelech, it continues on, kind of recounting these words. Moses wrapping up what is his final speech to the Israelites, including the blessing and the commissioning of Joshua. Moses is now nearing what is his final breath on earth. And so he is passing the leadership, passing the leadership of the Israelite people, the leading of the Israelite people. He's passing that on to Joshua. And so standing along the banks of the River Jordan, all of the Israelites, El Kol Yisrael, the whole of Israel, along with Moses. Moses is speaking here, and it says, verse 2, Moses says, I am now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you. The Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. The Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you will take possession of their land. Joshua also will cross over ahead of you. And then dropping down to verse 6, we read the words, these words, be strong and courageous. What is Hazak Ve'amatz? Hazak Ve'amatz in Hebrew, be strong and courageous. Noting we read these words, not once, not twice, but three times. Three times Hazak Ve'amatz shows up here in our Parsha. The first here in verse 6 to the entire nation of Israel. And then again, verse 7. We read, then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, be strong and courageous. And then again, verse 23, we drop to 23. It says, we read, the Lord gave this command to Joshua, son of Nun, be strong and courageous. Over and over and over again, we read Hazak Ve'amatz. Over and over and over again, we read, be strong and courageous. Which on one hand sounds really awesome, right? Kind of like it's a rally of some sort, right? And they're telling you to be strong, like we should be doing chest bumps and pounding fists, right? We should be really excited. But what we want to get here is that Hazat Ve'amatz doesn't stand alone. It doesn't stand alone. It is not simply a motivational speech intended to get you really kind of hyped up, right? Hazak ve'amatz, yes, absolutely. Be strong and courageous, go for it. But not because you're amazing, even though you are, you're all amazing. But not because you're amazing, not because you've got it all figured out. Not because you're the biggest and the best, not because you're the brightest bulb, not because you have the largest bank account, not because of the letters behind your name. But we need to get that flowing in and under and all through every single Hazak Ve'amatz, flowing in and under and all through every be strong and courageous, it says, we read, for I, God, will be with you. For I, God, will be with you. Hazak ve'amatz, be strong and courageous, absolutely. And the reason for, or we could say because, I will be with you. In a word, God says, you are not alone. You are not alone, right? As you face into that struggle, whatever that is for you, that challenge, as you face into that hardship, right, that brokenness, that pain, that ache, as you encounter that terrain or that crossing or the unknown, right, God says you are not alone. I will be with you. Again, verse 6, Moses speaking again to the whole of the Israelite nation. He says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. Whoever the them is for you, whatever the them is for you. For the Lord your God goes with you. The Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Translation, you are not alone. You are not alone. Verse 7, then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him, in the presence of all Israel, be strong and courageous. The Lord himself goes before you and will be, says, with you. Right? You are not alone. Dropping down verse 23, we read here, the Lord gave this command to Joshua, son of Nun, be strong and courageous, for you will bring the Israelites into the land I promised them on oath, and I myself will be with you. Hazak ve'amatz. Right? Be strong and courageous, absolutely. And the reason? And the reason because I, God, will be with you. Because you are not alone. Right? Whatever the struggle, whatever the challenge, whatever the hardship, whatever the brokenness, the pain, the ache, whatever the terrain, the crossing, the unknown, and all of the whatever of life, right? God says you are not alone. In fact, the most frequent promise in the whole of the Bible, the most frequent promise, it's not comfort in our distress, although that's definitely there. It's not provision for our need in our times of need, although absolutely it's there. It's not even I will forgive you, although that saturates the text. It's not even eternal life. The most frequent promise in the Bible, it's I will be with you. The most frequent promise in the Bible is you are not alone. You are not alone. Exodus 3 and 7, this is God speaking to Moses. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. And then we drop down to verse 10. So now, Moses, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Right? Like, who am I? Right? Who am I? I'm not that amazing. I don't have it all figured out. I'm not the biggest and the best. I'm not the brightest bulb. I don't have the largest bank account. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And then we read, and God said what? He said, I will be with you. God said, you are not alone. God made that same promise to Abraham, to Sarah, to Joseph, to Jacob, to David, to Amos, to Mary, to the disciples, to Paul. The list goes on and on. God said, I will be with you. You are not alone. When entering the wilderness, the Bible says, Exodus 13:21, by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so they would travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Point being, you are not alone. The great Psalm 23:4, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, right? I will fear no bad thing. Why? For you are with me. For you, God, are with me. Hazak ve'amatz, right? Be strong and courageous, absolutely. Because I, God, will be with you. You are not alone. Right? Whatever your struggle, whatever your challenge, whatever your hardship, your brokenness, your pain, your ache, whatever is the terrain in front of you, the crossing, the unknown, in all of the whatever of life, right? God says you are not alone. And it's that truth, that idea, that sense, that message, that promise that flows in and through the life and teachings of Jesus. Here is just one example from the Gospel of Mark 6:47. It says, we read later that night. Keeping in mind, just before this, Jesus has been with his disciples, a large crowd gathers, and so Jesus has been teaching, and then food is provided. You might know this as the feeding of the 5,000. And then we read here, later that night. And so later that night, the disciples are in a boat. It says the boat was in the middle of the lake. The boat being in the middle of the lake means it was way off course. This was supposed to be a short little trip of kind of along the coastline. And so when it says here that the boat was in the middle of the lake, that's kind of code word for we're in trouble. We're way off course. And he, Jesus, was alone on land. Verse 48, he saw the disciples, says, straining at the oars because the wind was against them. That word straining comes from the Greek, basanizo. And straining works. It has this sense of to torment, kind of as torture or to torment. And so in context here, it could be translated as harassed in rowing. They're being harassed in rowing. Noting also that in the ancient world, the sea was symbolic for chaos and disorder, symbolic for darkness, for evil forces at work. Meaning what began as really a little bit of a boat ride has now become a painful, brutal, sort of torturous kind of experience, right? Straining and struggling, pressing, right? Beaten by the wind, a wind that's pushed you out into the very midst of the chaos and the disorder, to which I imagine we can all relate. Right? There's that moment where maybe it's the phone call from the doctor's office, or maybe it's the call from a loved one, but this time it's different. Right? This time, in that moment, you are far from where you thought you might be. We received a phone call just like that. Actually, it was 12 weeks ago from today. It was Sunday morning, May 26th. Service had concluded. And we had been eagerly awaiting a call from our son. Because it was time. It was time for the birth of our precious granddaughter, Ember. It was her due date. And the phone call came, but the words spoken were nothing we could have ever imagined. This was just before she was to be born. We received that call that she had no heartbeat, that there was no life, and that Ember had died before she was born. And yet it's in the very midst of that moment that we read here that Jesus comes walking on the water. Verse 50, immediately he, Jesus, spoke to them and said, "Take courage." Hazak v'amatz. Immediately Jesus said to them, "Be strong and courageous." Hazak v'amatz. It is I, don't be afraid. Verse 51, then he, Jesus, it says, climbed into the boat, and it says we read with them. Immediately means there's no delay. Jesus, he gets into the boat with them. And the wind died down. Hazak v'amatz, be strong and courageous, absolutely. Why? Because I, God, will be with you. Because you are not alone. Jesus' final words to his disciples, what is often called the Great Commission, Jesus ends with the words, and surely I am with you always. And surely you are not alone. That struggle, that challenge, that hardship, that brokenness, that pain, that ache, that terrain, that crossing, the unknown, and all of the whatever, you are not alone. Which invites us, I think, then to consider, do we live that reality? Do we live that reality? We could ask, do we engage life with an awareness of God's presence? When we wake up in the morning, when we go to bed at night, and everything in between, the good times and the bad, do we engage life with an awareness of God's presence? We could ask, do I live attentive to the presence of God always with me? That is the promise of God. You are not alone. From Rabbi Shefi Gold, I like what she has to say. She says, each day I wake up with an intention that when I open my eyes, I will see and recognize God's face. When you hear about God's face, you can also think of his presence. I will see and recognize God's face in the details of the day I'm about to encounter. I prepare myself for wonder. I prepare myself. And so with that in mind, do we live each day expecting to see and recognize God's face? Do I intentionally seek the face of God in the details of the day? We could ask, do I prepare each day to embrace the wonder of God with me? Do I prepare each day to embrace the wonder of God with me? And then with that, in turn, we need to be thinking about and be mindful of the presence of others. To be mindful of the presence of one another, even right here in this room, inviting us to consider, are we mindful of the presence of one another? Are we mindful of the presence of one another? You know, I think we're all very aware that with technology now, we can sit in a room with a group of people, even those closest to us, and lack any sort of awareness of their presence. But I also think if we took away technology, it's still probably true. Are we mindful of the presence of one another? Do we practice paying attention to those around us? Do we practice paying attention to another's struggle and challenge? Right, their pain, their ache. Do we pay attention to to the terrain, the crossing, the unknown? Do we pay attention to those around us? Are we attentive to the wonder and beauty of the other? The wonder and beauty of the other. I think that for each of us, the danger is that life can become so cluttered that we forget. Right? That we forget that more than anything, it is about being with. It is about being with. The author John Ortberg, he drives this home in his book, God is Closer Than You Think. I've shared this before, or passages from him before. And so as we wrap up here, I want to leave us with this. God, Ortberg writes, God is crying out all around us. He is present in the breathless silence of the snow-smothered mountains. He is dancing with the sunlight that shatters on the ocean's waves. He is hiding in the decaying moss and lichen and crumbling shale in the old forgotten places in the world. No jagged mountain throws its sharp weight against the sky that is not a testament to his goodness. The entire sum of creation, each private and individual act of nature, is God waving hello. Set aside for now the question of to what extent any of us is capable of experiencing God's presence in our current spiritual condition. Set aside your past failures or your future worries. The teaching of Scripture is that God really is present right here, right now. The Spirit of God is available to you, is available to you and me, flowing all the time, welling up within us, quenching our unsatisfied desires, overflowing to refresh those around us. He, God, he is at work all the time in every place, and every once in a while, somebody somewhere wakes up. My prayer is that we would be a people awake to the ever-present God, the ever-present God with us. Vayelech Moshe, Vayedaber et Hadevarim HaEle, and Moses went and spoke these words.